You have to leave at 3? Okay. Yeah, I have to be somewhere by 4, so... All right, okay. Sounds good.
My head is now removing itself.
So I was on the bubble about going to see the movie. And you totally made me go see the movie.
I did.
And that's good because I actually did have a genuinely good aesthetic and as well as sort of ideological experience engaging the movie. So it was interesting to me.
I'm glad you were engaged, at least. I was shocked that you hadn't seen it already. I thought I was like super late to the party. As I said,
I was on the bubble, and I think that if there are times during the year when I see more movies than others because I'm not as busy. And I would have seen it. I've gone to see movies by myself that are much worse. Whatever that latest iteration of King Arthur was like a couple of years ago. And you're like, I don't even fucking know. I can't remember.
If it wasn't a horror movie.
It was terribly bad, and mostly I go see horror movies.
Yeah.
Or sci-fi. And then the only other thing I see is superhero movies with the teens and tweens.
Yeah, it's just all horror and children's movies, which is a really interesting... and considering that both involve, like, hyper-reality and, like, extreme suspensions of disbelief, it's not as weird as it seems.
I was at the credit union today, and the person who was dealing with me said that she only watches, or she doesn't like horror, she doesn't like, anything that's going to, like, disturb her. So she only watches comedies, she said. Okay. And then I thought, I don't even remember the last time I went to the theater, or even truly sought something out on any of my streaming services that was comedy.
Yeah.
In that categorical sense.
Yeah, it seems the last thing I watched that was a comedy was like I had never watched Wet Hot American Summer. And everybody, you know, or a lot of people that I know were like, it's so good, you have to watch it, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and I spent just a really unsurprisingly, I spent a lot of time thinking about how much comedy is just used to, like, reinforce existing, like, power narratives. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is, like...
A similar movie. I haven't seen Wet Hot American Summer, but a similar movie that I've seen multiple times and would even recommend is Not Another Teen Movie. and it with a cameo by Molly Ringwald at the end. But it's similarly, like, reflective of and critical of that.
Yeah.
So
now that we've spilled the beans.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So let's talk about The Lighthouse. I just basically made it up as a take when I said, this is the most interesting Old Spice infomercial that I've ever seen. And I mean, it's half clever.
Yeah,
it's clever,
like,
by half.
I woke up to that message and I was like, oh no.
No, it was,
I didn't like it.
It was really good. It was really, really good. You know what? Part of the hype of it has also had this underlying satirical element because it's sort of somewhat stereotypical images of old sea guys.
Oh yeah. You know? None of, like, the promotional material, I think, gets across. Look, is this going to just be a horror movie about how much it sucks to have a boss?
Yes.
It's like these romantic pictures of, like, two guys in black and white, like, staring off into the sea or whatever. And that's not really what the movie's about. Like, it joins the great pantheon of horror movies that there are about work, like Alien and Thing, and like how much it sucks to be isolated with, like, your fucking coworkers.
It seems to be, like, to me, like, I would have such a good time out on that island. I think that if I were physically able to do all the shit that he had to do, I think I would just take it. So for the ability to be out at sea for a month, or in the middle of the water for a month. But of course, he was carrying some other shit with him when he came in too. So, but you know, as do we all, right? So, I totally see what you're saying there and want to hear more about that, because what I was feeling the whole time was, in even with the stories about other forms of work, right? Like about lumberjacking, right?
Yeah.
And that is just this entire, for me, what I saw or walked away from was this sense of a huge machine that was particularly earlier in, you know, industrialization when, you know, although it continues to be as brutal in different places now,
mm-hmm.
but certainly during that time, you know, there's this sense in which being a worker, you know, was basically just risking your body and beating the shit out of your body all the time.
Oh yeah. And he brings up, I think, a couple of times how there's like trees as far as you can see. And then he's in this situation where there's water as far as you can see. Like having intentionally gone from one like backbreaking, dangerous profession to like an even more isolated and backbreaking, like dangerous profession. There's one thing like visually that I really liked about how the movie keeps like rooting itself as like a movie about labor. And that's like all of the little shots of, and of course now I don't remember, but like the specific name, but the body of like the government that deals with the lighthouse administration.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like on the back of somebody's jacket, and there's like all these little shots of, you know, just, like a metal plate on the wall that like this is administrated by the lighthouse like department, you know, of the USFG. It keeps like reminding you that like this is, that they're not just there because like somebody has to keep the lighthouse, but that they're part of like this bigger scheme of like lighthouse keepers everywhere.
It made me want to go research that.
Yeah, me too.
And to learn more about that, and to see if those administrative patterns were like other patterns that we, you know, hear about when we, you know, hear about, you know, when we read, you know, whether it's, you know, just straight up history, or, you know, sometimes there's like some philosophical authors who, like Foucault and others, who often assemble these old administrative documents to make a particular point about how power works. And so I was, you know, as I was watching it, I definitely felt that sort of, that hierarchy was sort of this sort of attempt to try to maintain these machines of order and industrialization, and kind of at the same time. Yeah. I mean,
did you happen to like Google, like, do lighthouse keep, is there a lighthouse keepers union?
I did not happen to do that. I didn't do that. I couldn't do it during the movie, obviously, but I didn't think, you know, and I also did not think about it in terms of unionization, because when I read a synopsis of the movie, there was some point or another where they are described as contractors. Or at least that, what's his name? Where Winslow is described as a contractor working on the lighthouse for a month, because it's a month long thing. So of course, you know, as a gig worker, I immediately identified with his plight of, I'm only doing this for a month. I want to get into something bigger and better. And it seemed like there was some sort of way to do that. And some of that is also dependent on the report, obviously, that old Tom is going to make about Winslow.
Yeah, there was definitely a point at which I was like, well, dude, you just, like, you know, go into the break room and, like, look at the poster that's going to tell you what your remediations for this, like, horrible, like, for your horrible employer are. But if he's a contractor, of course, that's not, things are not the same. But I was like, yeah, this guy just needs to unionize, like, just him.
Yeah, no, it's amazing that the kind of symbols that you're talking about that were continuously shown, that sort of, you know, and I think some other things about the regimentation and the sort of administration of lighthouse keeping were definitely ever present in the movie.
Oh yeah. I love that the log too, at the end, that, like, there's sort of this ominous foreshadowing throughout the whole movie that, like, what Willem Dafoe's character is writing in the log is, like, you know, Lovecraftian, like, it, maybe it has something to do with the light, or it's, you know, it's otherworldly, and, like, the big horror that it turns out to be is just that, like, he doesn't like his employee,
mm-hmm.
that he thinks he's a shitty worker. Like, that's the terrifying, terrible thing, that, like, his boss, who's kind of pretending to be his friend, like, doesn't like him because he keeps jacking off in the woodshed.
But it is a really turning point to sort of the final chaotic and, you know, just completely over the top kind of demented behavior or, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you've dragged me out here. You, like, made me drink. You're a dick, but you've, like, kind of gotten me to like you. And now it turns out this whole time you're recommending that I be fired without pay. Like, what? Like, and that's when it just completely,
mm-hmm.
that's when he decides to put an axe in this guy.
Yeah. And to, turn him into a dog.
Oh yes. The point at which I thought the movie was not going to get any weirder. And then we got weirder.
That was the weirdest part for me because, it was not, so I want to get into something in a deeper sense about a cluster of contemporary horror movies, including this one. So there were parts of this movie where there were a couple of actions that were unexplainable in terms of motive to me, both of Jordan Peele's movies. Horror movies, as well as Midsommar,
mm-hmm.
All contained scenes where characters were acting without completely explicable motives.
Sure.
You know, whether that's, and oftentimes that what they were doing was somewhat, where they were breaking a rule of some kind, or they were being, you know, deviant in some way, where I, as a viewer, kind of looked at and said, that doesn't make total sense to me as an act of autonomy of that character. I can see where there's some larger force directing that character's behavior. And I guess there was a lot of that in The Lighthouse for me, of going, well, they didn't have to take this particular turn, or they didn't have to make this particular choice.
Mm-hmm.
But they did, and in some ways, I guess, in The Lighthouse, maybe even more, this behavior is overdetermined. And I think that falls in line, I think, with your, you know, kind of what you saw in the movie as, you know, being a movie about capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
Is kind of the ways in which that outcome was inevitable.
Absolutely.
And we know it was inevitable because it happened with the prior person that worked under Thomas as well.
Oh yeah, the previous guy also went crazy through, like, oh, no fault of my own. Mm-hmm. Did you see The Witch?
Yes.
So I figured going into The Lighthouse that The Lighthouse was going to be about something, because The Witch is such a brilliant little movie, and it's pretty clear that Robert Eggers has, like, read a book before.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just making he's not Ty West, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's not not Eli Roth. And I spent, like, the entire movie kind of being like, what is this going to be about? Obviously it's not going to be about you know, the patriarchy in the same way that The Witch is, because there are no female characters. And it, you know, it wasn't until a couple of days later that I went, oh, that movie's about work.
Mm-hmm.
That movie, that's just The Thing, or Alien, but, like, mixed with Possession.
Mm-hmm.
And is about how horrible it is to be friends with your boss.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, on the surface, though, or in a more obvious and perhaps overly obvious way, it's also about Winslow trying to get up to the light.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And is that just a reflection? Do you think that's just a reflection of work hierarchy or workplace hierarchy, or is there something else going on there?
I think, okay, so obviously the whole thing has this element of, like, Prometheus.
Yeah, you know, no, exactly. Like, the final scene is pretty unmistakable.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the people there, so there's one hot take that I've seen about this movie is that the two characters are the same person, just at different times, and that the lighthouse, doesn't necessarily just represent, like, workplace hierarchy, but, like, looking for meaning in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so we've got, you know, Robert Pattinson's character, who's, like, young, he's kind of shiftless, he has apparently moved from, like, profession to profession, or from job to job, mm-hmm. rather.
Kind of killed somebody.
Maybe he kind of killed somebody and now he's, can't go back to working in timber.
I mean, if I tell a lie, I feel guilty about it for 6 years afterwards.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I can only imagine, you know, watching, you know, letting someone die through my negligence, or slightly deliberate negligence, or whatever it was. That shit would, you know.
Maybe,
I don't care what an asshole
see
I am.
A tree again, like,
yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
And then that Thomas Wake is the older version of him who has, like, you know, having had this dream as a young person that he's going to, like, have his own land and, you know, his work is going to, like, end up with, like, a him achieving some kind of, like, American dream, you know, where he's got, like, a family and a house and stuff. He's given that up. Due partially to the nature of this work and also to the nature of work in general that, like, no, actually all you get is the light.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you become the job. Like,
mm-hmm.
you don't get to have, you know, a wife and children. You don't get to have your own, you know, house on your own land because this work is so consuming that you're just going to stare into the light and jack off for...
Mm-hmm.
For your twilight years.
So what, I mean, it feels like there are all these invitations in the movie to go deeper and that when you get there, you realize that there's a lot of that, the underlying mythology and the monster part of the movie, you know, which is whatever, you know, has sort of possessed the lighthouse and has tentacles. that just seems like a prop to me. It just, you know, that monster is a prop, or that those tentacles are props. They're not really, I don't know that they, I mean, you could probably find, you know, like niches of meaning in a lot of those things, but it seems like a lot of that was just this sort of underlying scenery for this main deal about this relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what good horror historically has been. I was mm-hmm. trying to explain, so I have a 4-year-old and she's just now getting to the age where she's scared of things and she's scared of monsters a lot in this, like, nebulous context where
mm-hmm.
she's like, I'm afraid of, like, vampires sort of broadly, like, and because it's me, I sat down and tried to explain to her, like, what monsters are and, like, what horror is, that it's a way for people to, like, make manifest their fears about things that are more difficult to deal with, like, things that are nebulous or that are faceless and difficult to attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, you're afraid of vampires, like, because, you know, we're scared of death and we're afraid of disease and, like, I guess we're afraid of being bitten in the neck, like, all,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Really exactly the way that you should be parenting, right?
Well, I mean, it's all, like, really iconic and just sort of, that's exactly what you're supposed to be scared of with monsters. And so, I mean, it's kind of the same, almost the same socialization as, you know, sort of the underlying backdrop of of a movie that, you know, that kind of relies on this very, very minimally supernatural premise.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have made the movie without this, the mermaid and the tentacles. And by the way, the mermaid is presumably a female identifying or female appearing kind of character. So there is a female character.
But she only scream laughs at him. So I guess she's a female character with no lines, which is what how I should have qualified that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the scary thing is, you know,
a great scream, though.
Oh my gosh, it's
mean,
so good.
You know, if for no other reason that character existed to make that sound.
Yeah, I like absolutely loved it and wished that I could also produce
scream
that
like
sound.
That. Yeah.
Like, I'm like,
yeah.
How do I train myself to do this, and, mm-hmm. and where do I find the time? But, you know, like, are you scared, you know, of a tentacle monster in the lighthouse? Is that, like, you know, what's, I guess, a better, not just a better narrative, but, like, what is a better piece of culture? Like, are, mm-hmm. like, oh, there's a scary monster in
sea
the lighthouse.
Monsters, yeah.
Or is it, like, I'm genuinely really afraid that, like, I'm going to turn into, like, this fucking alcoholic lighthouse keeper who, like, stares at a light bulb for, you know, his 9-hour shift or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a real thing that could really happen very easily.
Right.
Right. You know, and I think that's a real fear that, like, all or many people living under capitalism face is, like, what is this labor going to do to me?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to turn into a tentacle monster? Am I going to turn into an asshole? You know?
Right, right.
What are my options here? It was an indulgent movie. Aesthetically, like, I loved it because I've got a real thing for, I don't know, unique or creative takes on, like, modern horror cinema. I love that he did, like, you know, the 1:1.19 aspect ratio. I don't even know how mm-hmm. that's like generally expressed out loud, but and, like, black and white, and
no, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful movie, and Willem Dafoe was amazing. I had just watched or heard an interview with him on a podcast, and then and I think I heard it the same day that I knew I was going to see the movie that night, and I ended up missing a really important appointment. I totally forgot about it because I had shifted from Thursday to Wednesday, and it's funny because I watched the movie, and I don't know that there was a direct relationship, but perhaps an indirect one. When I realized I'd missed this very important appointment, I immediately said, you know what? I don't fucking care that I missed this appointment. It was a work thing. And
sure.
I was like, I don't fucking care about this. And I'm going to tell the person exactly that I am so overworked and so, and just so beaten down with life that is why I missed that appointment, because I literally, you know, my mind just collapsed, and I said, oh, I need to, this is the only night that I can go see this movie that Casey and I are going to talk about. Perhaps the movie subversively sort of liberated me from this. But, you know, because I definitely felt the, you know, an overwhelm, much like being beat down by storms and alcoholic bosses.
Yeah, and carrying that drum of fuel up the stairs,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, like, the Sisyphus reference was a little bit on the nose, but, like, man, that's all right. I like.
No, God, you know what? Fucking go for it.
Yeah.
That's what I say, because I appreciate it so much. I appreciate so much the recent wave and cluster of films and directors in horror who are really taking things so seriously, and prioritizing aesthetics over complete, I guess, fidelity or complete, I guess, coherence, sure. internal coherence in a lot of ways. Yeah. I always appreciate that so much. Like if you, I mean, you break the fourth wall, I don't care what else you do in that film. I'm like, okay, no, much respect.
Yeah, give me another shot, you know, of like a wheelbarrow full of rocks
yeah.
that he's pushing up a hill.
Yeah.
I loved it. I'm super glad that I got you to see it.
Let me ask a couple of other questions about what you, if you have takes on them mm. and, you know, okay. if we sound like shit that then we can always erase it. But, The Seagull.
Andrew Wyeth's son, Jamie Wyeth, is also a painter and did an incredible series of paintings of seagulls. There's a big one called The Inferno in which like there's just a bunch of seagulls like on a furnace. But he did a series of seven other paintings that are the seven deadly sins expressed through seagulls. So there's like one that's, you know, eating a bunch of trash. Mm-hmm. And there's one where he's menacing, the gull is like menacing the viewer. And the second that all the seagull stuff started in the movie, I was like, oh, there's like at least one other person out there who thinks that like these seabirds are, very expressive and like a way to convey, like very human emotions through like a loud, obnoxious little bastard animal. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. What did you think of the gulls?
I felt like that birds play different purposes in different parts of the mythologies at work, and that the seagulls just came to represent all of those, you know, like it's not a seagull that eats, you know, Prometheus's liver. Right.
It's an eagle.
Yeah. And I felt like there were, other instances of that too. And I also, the fact that the gull, carries the spirit, you know, that the lore is that the gull carries the spirit of the fallen sailor, is again, I think, important in maintaining this framework of mythos around lighthouse lore and kind of as part of the worldview that's sure. at work in the movie. And I think that's also where the tentacles come from and where I think a lot of these sort of generic monsters or horrors come from is a reality that these folks probably had already constructed around lighthouses too. So,
yeah. mm-hmm.
And so the seagulls are definitely part of that. Okay. Next one is to put it incredibly indelicately, there's a great deal of jizz, the movie, The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
And so what's up with all that?
I was like clapping, man. I love, this is like another, I think, it's always been part of horror, like, for things to be gross. And some of the grossest things to humans are, like, other people's bodily mm-hmm. fluid.
He
like,
slimed me.
Yeah. Yes. I this is so weird, but I love it when people throw up in movies. I think that, like, just emesis in general always carries a lot of weight because it's so revolting to the viewer and like presumably to the other characters, like it always has a lot of meaning. And so like when he goes into the lighthouse and there's slime that is like very much coated as, you know, as semen like dripping down, I was like on my feet, like somebody just hit a home run. Like mm-hmm. I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want to see is like, okay, my boss is weird and like he's like, is he naked in there? Like I'm gonna go in there and like the most revolting thing that could possibly happen, which is like you get jizz on your face, like you get your boss's like jizz in your eye, happens. Mm-hmm. Like that's the scariest, grossest thing that could possibly happen there. And they did it. They shot it. They filmed it and put it in a movie. I was like, all right, more of this. Directors, take note.
Well, that was a spoiler alert in more ways than one.
That took me a second.
Last question. In terms of the way the new wave of horror, is there a historical moment that this is occupying, or is there like what what are we seeing in all of this? In all of these great movies that I continue to go see either by myself or with you.
Yeah. Yeah, because we saw both of Jordan Peele's movies.
We did.
Together.
We did, yeah.
And this is like a pretty nascent theory, so maybe I shouldn't even say it out loud, but I'm, oh well.
Give it a shot. Yeah.
I think that horror has like always been kind of leftist, always has had an element of subversiveness to it. Historically, I think now that the reason that we're seeing like really good horror movies is just because people are getting money. Mm-hmm. I think that like studios have kind of just decided to take a chance on, you know, somebody's weird idea. And you know, it was like always very possible to make movies like this. You just had to do it like in the woods with your friends.
Mm-hmm. And the niching of media, and of various genres of films, and, you know, caused also by other media and stuff like that means that there's actually a greater likelihood that someone will be like, well, if we support, you know, if we take some chances, then we'll get a bigger share of that niche.
There are definitely people who are going to see, like, people who are going to see any horror movie that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And
people who are like, oh, intelligent horror, you know.
Yeah, or, exactly.
You know, they kind of, you know, or conscious, you know, stuff, which I think that I looked around and I didn't see a lot of people talking about this movie in a political way. And so we may be one of very few obscure podcasts to end up doing that.
I mean, that's my whole jam. Horror movies and theory.